Offshore wind is set to make waves in New England, bringing jobs and renewable energy to the region. But how do we do this new industry right and fair? In a new series called Power Shift, The Promise of Offshore Wind, WBUR and E&E News look deeply at wind and what it means for us and for the world. The first part of that series is set to premiere tomorrow morning on WBUR's Morning Edition, but we're going to preview it now. And to joining us to do that, WBUR environmental reporter Miriam Wasser. Miriam, welcome back.
Hey, Tiziana.
So diving headfirst into offshore wind, Miriam,
yes.
Lots of hype in the past. I'm thinking of the storied history of Cape Wind, which, of course, in the end came to nothing. If I'm living in Natick, let's say, or New Bedford, is offshore wind about to affect my life?
Yeah, so I would say that the failure of Cape Wind definitely looms large over the industry, but it really does seem like we've turned a corner this time, and I think it really is happening. As to your second question, is it going to affect people's lives? The answer is yes. You know, over the next few decades, offshore wind, if it really gets built out, should decrease the price of electricity. So if you live in Natick, hopefully you see that reflected in your monthly bills. And bigger picture, sort of especially for someone maybe living in a place like New Bedford, this new industry is going to create a lot of jobs. And some of those will be in construction, but a lot of them will be in manufacturing or engineering and with the wind developers themselves. And New Bedford right now is largely known as a fishing hub, but in the future, it could be, you know, New England's offshore wind hub or one of the offshore wind hubs as well.
So it's coming. It's important. So let's dive in now to your reporting. There are three parts to look forward to over the next few days. Tell us about these three parts and how you picked them.
Yeah, so, well, you know, our original story list was a lot longer than three stories, as I'm sure you can imagine.
Fair enough.
Yeah, reality starts to set in and you have to narrow things down. So the three topics that we chose really stuck out to us as big themes with big questions that we wanted to probe. And, you know, sometimes you start reporting a story with a sense of what you're going to find. And in the case of these three topics, I think we genuinely wanted to know the answers to these questions. So, you know, as a reporter, that's always really fun.
Mm-hmm.
The first story is about the promise of jobs. So if you follow environmental news, you've probably heard people, including our president, talk about the promise of green jobs. And with offshore wind, you know, states and the White House have put numbers to that. The White House says that if we build out 30 gigawatts of offshore wind by the end of the decade, which is essentially equivalent to like putting all of New England's power plants in the water, that could create up to 77,000 jobs. So that's a lot of jobs.
Yeah, that's
and,
a lot.
Yeah. And Ben and I wanted to know, like, what are those jobs? And are they going to be good jobs or minimum wage positions? Where are they going to be located? What sort of education or training are you going to need to get them? And then perhaps most importantly, who is going to get them? So one of the people that we talked to who I think really drove this home was a union rep named John Grossman. And we have a little bit of tape from him. As he noted, not all green jobs are necessarily good ones.
Creating jobs by itself is not the solution. The jobs have to be good jobs, and the people who need them have to be the ones who get them.
And, you know, just one more thought on jobs. Like as many supporters of offshore wind say, it's not every day that we build a whole new energy industry from scratch, but that is what we're doing with wind. And that means this is an opportunity to build environmental justice and equity into the industry early.
So Miriam, in a minute, I know you're going to tell us about the other two, but you mentioned Ben.
Yeah.
So I just want to note for listeners, that's Ben Storo from E&E News who worked on this series with you, right?
Correct. Yes. Ben Storo was my co-reporter and co-writer for this whole series. And he is, one of the authors of it.
Okay, so go ahead, tell us briefly about these other two stories we're going to hear this week.
Yep, so on Thursday, you will hear a story about fishing and whether fishermen and wind can coexist. So the commercial fishing industry has really emerged as the biggest opponent of offshore wind in this country. And, you know, any story you read seems to have a quote from a fisherman or a fishing group outlining the threats that they say it will pose. And Ben and I going into this, you know, it seemed really far-fetched to us to say that offshore wind was going to like kill the commercial fishing industry, which is sort of the sense you get sometimes from reading these stories. So what we really set out to understand is what do we actually know about the potential impacts? What fishermen in specific and fisheries in specific are going to be affected. And given that climate change is already impacting the ocean in really profound ways, what's the cost of doing nothing?
And are we going to find out that we know a good deal? Do we know what those potential impacts are?
Yeah. I mean, our sort of our big takeaway from that is that the vast majority of fishermen are probably not going to be affected by offshore wind, but there are some who will, and those who are affected are going to be greatly impacted. And for the most part, it's going to be the small operations, the one boat, the little individual, kind of like ma and pa style fishermen. In terms of ecosystem impacts, I think that there's a little bit more uncertainty about that as well.
But. It's going to be really interesting to have you tell us, you know, those distinctions and tell us some of those individual stories. All right, so then big oil, right?
Yep. Number three is how big oil wants to become big wind. So some of the biggest oil companies in the world, like Shell and BP, are getting into offshore wind. And Shell, for example, is partially behind the Mayflower project, which is likely to be the second major offshore wind project near Massachusetts. And we wanted to understand, how seriously are these oil companies taking climate change and their promises to go green? You know, does getting into offshore wind represent an actual change to their business model, or is it an opportunity for them to greenwash?
And that one comes on Friday, right?
Correct.
Okay. So as I was preparing, looking at your reporting, et cetera, Miriam, I thought it was so interesting, just the pure range of places you saw, people you spoke with, that sort of the almost, obviously it was in print, but almost the sights and the smells and the sounds of reporting this. So bring us one or two of the most surprising or vivid scenes that you and Ben encountered.
Sure. And I'm very glad to hear you say that. We worked very hard to make sure that we were not just talking at a 30,000 foot level, but that we were introducing readers and listeners to real people.
Yeah.
So I think the first one that sticks out is probably the fishing boat. So we drove all the way to Montauk to spend a day on a squid fishing boat. And that was definitely an experience, I will say. I don't think either of us had been on a commercial fishing boat before. So just, you know, seeing how they do things was fascinating. But the specific boat we were on was owned by a fisherman named Dave Arapach. And he fishes from Nantucket to New Jersey, which is an area that's very much slated for wind development. And, you know, as I just mentioned a moment ago, one of our big takeaways is that it's the little guys like Arapach who are going to probably be the most affected and have the most to lose from offshore wind. So, you know, just as we watched him and his crew haul in these like huge nets filled with hundreds of pounds of fish and squid, you could just see in his eyes how much he truly loves what he's doing. And you can hear in his voice how hard it is to be a fisherman in 2021 and how scared he is of what's to come. So we have a little bit of tape from a conversation we had with him that we can play.
There's so many things going against you as a commercial fisherman in the United States. And now these wind farms, just, it's almost like that's the final nail in the coffin. I hope I'm wrong, but I mean, there's no young guys really that want to fish here anymore. And that's changed in the last 5 years. I mean, guys are just sick and tired of being kicked in the teeth.
And, you know, I think one of the things that I just love about this line from him is it really drives home the point that offshore wind development isn't happening in a vacuum. It's just one more thing in a series of hardships that he and other fishermen face.
All right. So give us one more, Miriam, one more. Introduce us to one more person or one more idea that really captured you.
Sure. So obviously we talk a lot in this series about jobs and the people who are getting jobs, and we set out to find who these people are. And that landed us at a class at the Mass Maritime Academy called Working from Heights. So this was a class for union workers. And in this particular day, it was all iron workers from across New England. And they were practicing using going up and down ladders. So, you know, a lot of the work they'll be doing out in the ocean is in these huge turbines, and they'll be hundreds of feet above the air at sea. So if they fall, they need to know what to do or how to rescue people. And a lot of these people will be out there on the ocean next summer constructing the Vineyard Wind project. And one of the people that we met was a guy named Billy Veets, and he is an iron worker from Roxbury. And I don't want to give away too much of his story because I want people to tune in tomorrow, but Vitz is someone who just really believes in offshore wind as a climate solution. And here's a little bit of tape from him.
I'd like to be able to tell my son in the future that I was a part of doing something that helped reduce carbon emissions and just kind of be a part of this whole new industry of building a clean energy infrastructure in the United States.
And I'll give you one little more detail about Billy Vitz. So we were also just really drawn to him because he had this really human moment where he told us that he wanted to help build Vineyard Wind because of guilt. So he helped build the controversial Weymouth Natural Gas Compressor Station a few years ago, which is a project that I know you and I have talked about a lot.
Yeah, you followed it closely.
And he feels really bad about that because natural gas creates a lot of methane and carbon emissions. And he sees offshore wind as a way to make it up to the planet, as he says. So it just really struck us because it's like not the sort of sentiment you would expect to hear from a really gruff guy with a hard hat and lots of tattoos.
All right. So Miriam, last question. Series begins tomorrow. What do you hope people will take away from it?
Sure. So to me, I think the big takeaway is sort of where we started, in that it's not every day that we build an entirely new industry from scratch, right? And people want it to do a lot of good things, but it's not going to be easy, and there are going to be a lot of trade-offs. And I think in some ways it's a microcosm of trying to address climate change at large, right? It's messy and complicated, and there is no perfect solution.
All right. That is WBUR environmental reporter Miriam Wasser. Miriam, thanks.
Thanks for having me.
And the series is called Power Shift, The Promise of Offshore Wind. It's a collaboration between WBUR and E&E News. You can listen to WBUR's morning edition tomorrow morning for the first installment of 3 over the next few days.